Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Paul Hitchcock, and really excited to have my two guests on here today. I've got Harry Barth, who is the founder and senior managing partner for the asset protection, estate planning, and business planning firm Barth Calderon, located in Southern California with 6,000 clients across the country. Harry does about 40 workshops a year through the firm in very high demand for this sort of education. And we're going to be focused on, of course, the Corporate Transparency Act. We'll get to Harry here in a minute here. Also very happy to have Marty Stowe here, who is with Varkers, working with payroll companies. And welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Pleasure to be here. Yeah.
And so as we get going here, I'm going to, Marty, go to you first, but I want to let everyone know that you can chat your questions in as we go along here. Please feel free to type in your questions. We will address those. We're going to have some Q&A at the end. If there's some questions along the way, pertinent to what Harry's talking about, we'll address those at that time. And then also the information for Harry and Marty will be in the chat there to get connected to them. So we'll put some contact information there and happy to do that. So Marty, you want to take it away?
Yeah, we're really excited to be here with Harry. The Corporate Transparency Act is huge for us at Varkers. And for those of you that aren't aware, or some of our members might be on. So what Varkers is they are peer advisory groups specifically for the payroll outsourcing industry. What we do is we bring independent payroll companies together, and we have peer advisory groups for all levels of leadership within a payroll company. We have groups for CEOs, groups for key executives, sales leaders, service leaders, implementation managers, tax managers, all the critical leadership roles within a payroll company. And one of the reasons I'm so excited to be on this call is the Corporate Transparency Act is a very hot topic that is being talked about in all of our payroll peer advisory groups right now, not only because the payroll companies are consider trusted advisors very much like their company's CPA firm or law firm. So it's incumbent upon our member payroll companies to make sure that they're educating their clients as far as what the compliance guidelines are with the Corporate Transparency Act, especially the new developments that Harry's going to talk about that have just happened over the last week. And they're even going so far as to say, hey, should we be even doing some of this filing and reporting for our companies as an ancillary revenue stream? So again, a very hot topic. And this is the Corporate Transparency Act is a great example of the types of things we talk about at our Varkers peer advisory group. So we're very excited to be here for this webinar.
Great information, Marty. And if people want to get connected to you, is that email? We'll put it up in the chat. Is that the best way if they're interested in learning more about your business?
Sure. Actually, just email me and be more than happy to provide any information to those payroll companies, independent payroll companies around the United States that would be interested in learning more about being a part of a peer advisory group.
Love it. Love it. Well, that gets us over to you, Harry. A lot of new stuff going on. What do we need to know?
Okay, well, here we go. We have a lot to talk about today in the hour that we have together. But let's start with a few definitions, because I'm going to use some terms that people may not be familiar with. One term I'm going to be using is FinCEN. You hear me say FinCEN quite a bit. That just refers to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. So the Corporate Transparency Act authorizes the United States Department of Treasury through the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network to implement every aspect of the Corporate Transparency Act. And I think it's very important to understand what it's all about and why philosophically. Basically, it started back at 9/11, guys and girls, and it was designed and the government is the Patriot Act, Know Your Client, all of these various different Sarbanes-Oxley that are being designed to say, who are the people behind the veil? And the concern is terrorist financing, money laundering, tax evasion, and other nefarious types of activities that were done through small shell companies or shelf companies. We had the Panama Papers, the Pandora Papers. We had a president with 18 different shell companies that are being used. So what's important to understand is that the Corporate Transparency Act, its goal, because as we talk about everything today, its goal is to who are the human beings, Marty, who are behind the veil of the entity. So the purpose is to drill down who's in charge, who's in control. And it's not targeted to big companies. That's not where the problems lie. It's targeted to small companies. It's the hair salon. And it's behind the hair salon where the money laundering or terrorist financing occurs. So this is an act that is targeted to small companies. And it is, and think about this, it is every single small business in the United States of America is impacted. The guesstimate is about 35 million businesses are going to be impacted by the Corporate Transparency Act. Boy, talk about payroll people and businesses. This is it. We're there. And when you look at, as we learned today, about what a beneficial ownership interest is, the number of reporting people involved in the Corporate Transparency Act and in these 33 million could bring the reporting up to close to 200 million. And so to start, it impacts, unless it's an exemption, which we will cover, every LLC, every corporation, every limited partnership, every limited liability partnership. But the elephant in the room, as many people have heard about, is that, and I always talk about, is whether or not this Corporate Transparency Act, which, by the way, was bipartisan legislation that was passed as part of a defense act in 2021, is constitutional. That was a big question, a multitude of questions that came up about that. And there was a case called the National Small Business Association versus Yellen, which was in the Northern District of Alabama in federal district court, which is looking to have the Corporate Transparency Act, for a multitude of reasons, declared unconstitutional. And in all of my prior talks on this subject matter, and I've done a gajillion of them already, I've always said that my humble opinion will be, after I've been at this almost 50 years, that the vast majority of the Corporate Transparency Act will withstand scrutiny, but some aspects of the Corporate Transparency Act will be declared unconstitutional and should be. And I think that's important as we go through today. You'll see the various different components, and you'll see those that have the rough edges around them that may have some questionable constitutionality. So on Friday of last week, the judge in the small business case versus Yellen declared in the district court that the Corporate Transparency Act, in his legal opinion, was unconstitutional. First, it's very important to understand what that impacted, Marty. It impacted only the plaintiffs in that lawsuit. So the members of the National Small Business Association, for the moment, no longer need to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. Everybody else in the country still needs to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. Now, best case, all of us colleagues that sit around and work in the business of law, we feel that this is going to be appealed quite quickly by the government to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And the best guesstimation, of course, trying to do any guesstimation when it comes to the government, it's a little difficult. The best guesstimation is that the judge's decision in Northern Alabama is going to be overridden and that the injunction is going to be lifted. The court in Alabama, just to make it easy for everyone who's with us and listening today, basically said it didn't get into the weeds as to all the various components that we're going to get into today together. They just basically said that they didn't feel that Congress had the power to enact this act. In other words, that's what made it unconstitutional. They didn't go into benefit and burden. They didn't go into clarity. They didn't go into any of the components of the act. They just turned around and said they never had the power in order to enact it. So now that we know that it just affects this small group of people for the moment, IHK. So I think it's important to understand that the court also laid out what it thinks Congress needs to do in order to make it constitutional. And more likely than not, that is what's going to happen because it's bipartisan. And we look at the goals of the act are not nefarious, but to make things better. What is it? It's a compilation of a list of all of the human owners of LLCs, corporations, limited partnerships, limited liability companies, every small business in America. So before we get into how we actually get into it, let's talk about who's accepted from it. What's the exemptions? You know, who doesn't have to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act? But just a second before we get there, maybe one of the unconstitutional provisions is the government serious about this, Barney? Well, here's the deal. Once compliance is required, and we'll talk about the dates that compliance is required, there is a $591 a day fine, civil fine, every day that the company is not in compliance. So if we're not in compliance just for 10 days, $5,910 fine. And that's just by autopilot. So if you're doing compliance by X date, if you're not in compliance by that date, and there are no exceptions, all right, $591 a day, that could go up to $100,000, $200,000. In addition, if one willfully does not comply with the act, there's between a $10,000 and $100,000 fine that's imposed on top of that, and up to 2 years in federal prison for failure to comply. These are some of the areas that I think, Marty, are maybe a little overdone. You know, we have very, very strict things to do. People may try to comply, may not be, and they're going to put them in jail. If we don't file a tax return, they don't put you in jail. But here they want to put you in jail because this list that they're compiling is for the use of law enforcement. That's the purpose of it. The purpose of it is for the government of the United States, the government of the United Kingdom, government of Switzerland, to be able to share information about who are the humans behind the entities. One thing, which is the first time I'm making this announcement today, that if somebody violates the Corporate Transparency Act and then commits a crime which is related to the Corporate Transparency Act, it goes to 10 years in jail and a $500,000 fine. So it's kind of like bank robbery with a knife or bank robbery with a gun. You do it with a gun, you know, it gets enhanced. So there are enhancements that go along this as well.
But they're not messing around, is the point.
No, they're not. Then they're not messing around. And I think, as I said earlier, I think more likely than not, this will remain mostly intact. For everybody, there may be a few bumps along the road. So let's talk about who's exempt. That's really important because that affects your constituency significantly, Marty. So let's go about who does not have to comply. So big public companies do not have to comply. If you're a public company on American Stock Exchange, New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, SEC, FINRA, they got enough information about all the people who are in charge that they know who they are. So they're not worried about them. They are exempt from filing, a public company. SEC registered investment advisors, people who are providing investment advice, they are exempt from the act because the SEC knows who they are. They've been fingerprinted, background checked. You know who's involved. Remember, who are the humans behind everybody? The government knows who they are, so they're exempt. Venture capital fund advisors are exempt. Insurance companies and insurance producers, same reason, they're subject to state regulation. They are exempt from doing it. Other highly regulated financial service companies like credit unions, banks, registered securities, brokers, dealers, trust companies, highly regulated. We know who the people are. Now, trust companies are funny because the trust company itself may be exempt, but if the trust is holding an entity that's subject to reporting, then the trust company needs to report. And I'm going to explain that in a few minutes. Public accounting firms, if they are subject to Sarbanes-Oxley for public reporting, they are exempt. Tax-exempt entities, you know, nonprofits, political organizations are exempt. Trusts themselves are exempt. If it doesn't get its birth from the Secretary of State's office, so we don't have to go into the Secretary of State's office in North Carolina, for example, and give birth to the LLC. If it's not a state registered entity, it's not part of the Corporate Transparency Act. And then subsidiaries of exempt companies are also exempt. But that's very interesting. Just let me just give you an example for that there, because there's one other very one, which is the one that will probably mostly impact your constituency. And Marty, this is an and, not an or. All right. So if one has 20 full-time or more full-time employees as defined by state law, and they have their headquarters or an office in the United States of America, and they have over $5 million worth of gross sales, they are exempt from reporting under the Corporate Transparency Act. And you would think that's a lot of firms. But let me give you an example of myself. So I own my law firm. I do have over 20 employees. My headquarters is in the United States of America. Our gross sales are over $5 million. My law firm is exempt. But Harry has 12 other entities that hold real estate, that hold equipment, that hold stocks, bonds, and cash, that hold various different investments that I have made. I have 12 other entities and 12 other ancillary type companies. Like you have ancillary type companies. All of those don't have 20 employees and over $5 million of gross sales. They are subject to it. So if someone might have an LLC that was put together for estate planning purposes or asset protection purposes, it could have a $30 million building in it and two employees. Rents could be over $5 million, but doesn't meet the employee requirement. It is subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. So that's very important to understand. 20 full-time employees, not 1099s, not part-time employees, full-time employees, and $5 million of gross sales. So one of the questions that come up quite frequently is, you know, hey, sometimes people are on a borderline, you know, what happens if I have 20 employees now, but I have 18 employees in September, all right? And so I might be a exempt company at the day that I file, let's say it might be in March of 2024. I drop down to 18 employees. Hence payroll company, you know, here we go, there's evidence. We drop down to 18 employees. I now, under the current law, the way it stands, I have 30 days now to comply because now I am no longer an exempt entity. This, and if I don't comply within that 30 days, so it's very easy for a company that has 20 employees, 21 employees, drop down to 17 employees, all right, and not report that to FinCEN within 30 days, and now $591 a day fine starts to accrue. This is the type of thing that makes this act somewhat unconstitutional, and I think that needs to be modified. There needs to be more reasonable time limits to get things done. Now, let's talk about time limits for a second. So we're going to draw a line today in the sand, and we're going to put together a company and bring it under the act. But there's a draw line in the sand. They have all of the companies that were in existence prior to January 1st, 2024. All right. all of those companies under current law have until December 31st, 2024 to come into compliance, to be registered under the Corporate Transparency Act. And by the way, that registry of all of who the owners are and all the sensitive information is not public. And there are severe penalties for anyone that tries to make it public. So that's one group. There is legislation moving through Congress that looks to extend that reporting period for the 33 million, which actually turns to 200 million, you'll find out in a few minutes, to December 31st, 2025. All right. And I think with this thing that's happened in Alabama, you know, which puts some uncertainty as to the validity of the Corporate Transparency Act, I think we may get more likely than not, we will get an extension of the period. But we can't rely upon that. We're talking about government, and government does strange things. Second of all, then we have new entities, entities that are formed after January 1st, 2024. From the day they're given birth at the Secretary of State's office, it becomes a matter of public record that that entity is formed. We have 90 days to bring that into compliance. So 30 days for changes, 90 days for a new entity, and that's currently to December 31st, 2024, for a pre-existing entity. It could be an entity that was in existence 75 years ago, 100 years ago. Makes no difference. If it doesn't meet any of those criteria, it must record under the Corporate Transparency Act. So now let's talk about how and who and why. So the reporting entity, Marty, and for all of the people that are with us today and people that are going to hear this, is the company. The company is the reporting entity. So we're going to turn around and we're going to form a company just for after January 1st, 2024. We're going to do it in March, and we'll call it Marty Paul Harry Co. LLC. And what are we going to do? We're going to make widgets, of course, and we're going to have a DBA Widgets R Us. All right. And so we go, we bring it to the Secretary of State's office. So we did it in Delaware, and Delaware said on March 15th, our, you know, Marty Paul Harry Co. was born. We now have 90 days to bring that into compliance. And that part of the law is still in effect. We're not part of the National Small Business Association in Northern Alabama. We are a new entity being formed today. So we, under the right now, we need to comply. So what happens is that what do we need to do to comply? That's the first thing. So we don't, we're not an exempt company. We don't fall into any of those exemptions. We're kind of a new company. We have a couple employees. We're making our widgets. So we have to go to FinCEN Network, to their website, because everything must be done electronically, and we need to file. Now, one of the things you're talking about revenue sources and the people in your constituency, you know, should they file? Should they help people file? I think you're going to find that it's a little challenging in that respect. So the AICPA, the Association of Certified Public Accountants, has advised all the accountants across America not to get involved with the Corporate Transparency Act. They consider it the unauthorized practice of law. So, and you will see why. That we have to talk about control, ownership, estate planning, a lot of factors that are involved. So it might be a little, doesn't mean that they can. Just it might be a little dangerous to put your foot into that water because of the analysis that has to take place. And the other thing, too, is because at least at the moment there are criminal penalties associated involved with it, it might be better if we're going to use a third party to use a law firm because of the attorney-client privilege. That may be helpful. Mm-hmm. It's not a mandate. It just might be smarter to do that. And there's going to be some activity there. So we'll get to questions in a little while. So what do we have to do, Marty, to file our company? Mm-hmm. All right. So first thing we got to do is we got to file it with FinCEN. We got to give them a name, our name, Marty Paul Harry Co. LLC. We must give them all of our DBAs. right? Whatever widgets are us, widgets are them, they have to go. We have to give them the physical address of our company, not a post office box, not a UPS suite, not the attorney's office, not the accountant's office, not the payroll people's office. It's got to be where the physical company is located. If it's located in someone's house, then someone's house needs to be the physical location. And we must give them a unique identifying number. Now, that unique identifying number for most of us is the EIN number that you're very familiar with. So we apply, you get the EIN number for Marty, Paul, Harry Co., and that becomes part of the compliance. If it's a single member disregarded entity, and we do not have an EIN number for convenience, Marty, then your social security number needs to go there as well. So it's a pile of relatively sensitive information. So that's the starting. So Marty, Paul, and Harry Co. LLC is now the reporting and responsible entity for reporting. That's level one, that's the company. Now the company needs to report the following things for everyone after January 1st, 2024, but not prior to January 1st, 2024, the company applicant must report. So let's say, Marty, you came to my law firm and one of my paralegals, Cheyenne, helped us form this entity in Delaware. So Cheyenne must report that she filed the paperwork with Delaware to form Marty, Paul, Harry Co. If Harry was the attorney that suggested to us that we form this LLC, Harry must report as well. So Harry, the attorney, told Cheyenne, the paralegal, to form this entity for Marty, Paul, and Harry. That is the company applicant and is required to report. For all entities, Marty, prior to January 1st, 2024, we don't need the company applicant. God knows who did it 30 years ago. We don't know. It's not required. Then the next that has to be reported are who are the owners? Who owns more than 25% of our company and who is not a minor? Okay. So real simple. We'll start simple. Then it gets a little bit more complex. Marty, Paul, and Harry are the three owners. We each own a third, 33 and a third. So we are the beneficial owners. We must report. What must the company report about its beneficial owners? Well, you got to get Marty Stowe, your name, your full legal name, your home address, where you live. Ugh. All right. Your address has to be reported. Again, no UPS, no lawyers, no accountants. For privacy, it sucks. We got to report our home address. And then we must upload electronically a PDF of your driver's license, your passport, your ID card, your federal issued or your state issued ID card. There must be government documentation with your face on it and verifying information that gets reported. So all of that has to be reported to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network as the three beneficial owners of this now reporting company. For people, a very important tip and trick is that everybody should go to the FinCEN website, and Paul will put that in the chat in a little while, and get what's available. You set up an account there. That's something that we can't as lawyers do for you. I can't do this for you, Marty. But you got to go there and set up an account because they want to know where'd you go to elementary school, you know, what the color was your first dog, you know, two-factor authentication, three-factor authentication. You give them that information, your name, your address, and your driver's license. They will issue you a number, like a social security number. So it's Marty Stowe, FinCEN number 123456789. So now, Marty, on every time you're involved with a company, you could just Marty Stowe number so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-so. But you, but if there's any change, if you move to a different state, if you move to a different address, if you change your name, if you have a change of something on your driver's license or your passport, you have 30 days to update that with FinCEN. And the company, our company, has an obligation to make sure that you, Marty, update your information. So this is interesting. So if the company has the responsibility to make sure that the information is updated, maybe in our operating agreement now, you know, for our LLC, it needs to be some new legalese. It's called Corporate Transparency Act, where the three of us sign that we promise to keep all of our information up to date. If we're going to be a member of our company, it's a mandate that we keep everything up to speed with FinCEN. So our company is not fined because of us. Another constitutional question. Our company could be fined because Marty, you know, didn't update his information. And there's no exceptions. So it's kind of weird. So we have to keep it up to date. We now have, so Paul and Harry and Marty, we all have our report of beneficial ownership. But what's scary, well, not scary, is it's not clear by the language of beneficial ownership, because there is a subset of that or an equal set of that. It's also who's in control. So they want to know who controls the company. All right. That is also, so I got the company applicant. I got the company itself. I got Marty, Paul, and Harry. Now let's say in our LLC, Marty, we hired as the manager of our LLC, ABC Co., an S corporation, as our manager. So the manager is not even an owner of the company. Mm-hmm. Just we've said, you're going to be the manager. But we gave the manager money. What do they got? They got control. You run it for us, right? That manager is now a reporting entity, okay? So now the manager, who's a corporation, who are the CEO? Who is the COO? Who is the CFO? They all have to report their names, their addresses, and their identifying numbers. Ugh, so you mean some third-party company now has to report because they're in control of our company? The answer is yes. If they have a board of directors that can fire or change the C-suite members, owners, then every member of the board of directors needs to report their information to FinCEN. They are really drilling down. Who's behind the veil? Now, so I was working with a peer group, people in Texas that are in the oil and gas business. And it was, I think everybody in Texas is in the oil and gas business. All right. The oil and gas business. They were telling me, let me give you a simple scenario, and this will bring the point home for us here. When they drill an oil well in Texas, that's a risky business. They have blowouts, they have fires, people get injured. So every oil well pretty much is its own LLC. Just makes sense from an asset protection point of view. And we're all about asset protection. I'm an asset protection attorney. So the oil well is oil well LLC. It doesn't have 20 employees, doesn't have $5 million gross sales. It's a reporting entity. So we have to put all the information. And usually they have four or five investors who've invested in that oil well to drill that oil well. They are always LLCs. So we have five LLCs that are the owners, each at 20, you know, each some, if they're over 25%, everyone that's over 25% has to report. So if you and I have 25% of that, of an LLC that owns that oil well, we are now a 25% reporting entity, and we need to report as well. Usually those LLCs are held by a holding company. Now, the holding company, which now holds the 25% of our oil well, and all the components of that need to report. And then, Marty, you and I were talking because we do estate planning, and we told you, Marty, your investment, we don't want it going through probate. We don't want it going through surrogate court. God forbid something happens to you. Should be in your family trust. Okay. So we put in the family. Now, the trust itself is an exempt entity. It doesn't file the trust with the state. But now it's holding a greater than 25% interest in a reporting entity. So now, who created the trust? You and your spouse, for example. Both of you become reporting entities. Who's the trustee? Their reporting entity. Who is the beneficiary of the trust is a reporting entity. Who is the trust protector who can change the trustee? They're a reporting entity. And who holds, for example, a power of appointment? It's different powers that we use in trusts to move assets between generations. Because they can move assets, they become reporting entities. So what happens is on this simple oil well, we can have close to 40 to 45 reporting entities. So that's why I said it's not just the entity, it's all of the reporting that goes around it. Now, what's interesting to note is that this analysis, so what do we have to look at? We got to look at your estate plan. We need to know who are the controlling people in your estate plan if it owns an entity. This is, I don't know how payroll people could do that or CPAs could do that. Mm-hmm. We have to look at control. Now, control could be interesting. We could have done this. You could have had 33% of the company of our LLC. Paul could have had 33%. I could have had 33%. And all of our 33, 33, and 33 were non-voting interests in our LLC. And then we had your kid. We gave them 1%, and that's voting. Controls, right? That 1% now becomes a reporting entity. So I think for every new entity and for every single old entity, we now have to go back to the shareholders' agreements and make sure that we have CTA language that is now incorporated in those operating agreements to make sure that the companies have a methodology for keeping everyone in compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. It is a hated act, Marty. Because one of the things is the burden. Where's the burden going to fall? The burden falls on good, solid, small American business, right? Not big companies. Falls on small business. It's costly. It's estimated, I was reading today, that the estimated compliance cost is close to $8,000 for a small business to comply between filing fees and analysis fees. Because you got to analyze all of these, who's in control, who owns what, how do they own it? And then what do you do when some shares are held by, you know, a child, all right, when the child is 16 in a trust, then the child becomes 18, they reach the age of majority. Now we have 30 days to switch it to the child. And then the child, or even when the child is a minor, you have to have the parents, right? The parents have to report. What if the parents are divorced? They don't even know where the heck the spouse is. They don't know where the spouse lives. Spouse, matter of fact, doesn't want to tell you where they live. They have no interest in having you know where they live. So, or estranged business partners that over the years, over 30 years or 40 years, look at what can happen. And all of that has to be ferreted out, because at the end of the day, under the current act, the way it's written, and I think this is one of the constitutional issues, there are no exceptions. We need to determine who is the human being. I can't leave down to this 25% is held by Blue Sky Trust. Who's behind Blue Sky Trust? We don't know everybody behind Blue Sky Trust. That's exactly what they're after. But we know if we had, let's say we had over the years, and then we're looking backwards, we have a rotten egg that's in our business. You know, they're the people that own 5% of our business. We don't see from them. They're troublemakers. Now, how they got it, they inherited when our partner died and got to their kids, all right? And so, you know, they may be small owners, but let's say they've accumulated 25% of our business and they don't want to give us information. We don't have any choice. We have to get, or we got to buy them out, or we got to get rid of them. We don't know what to do, because otherwise we get hit with $591 a day fine. They can get hit with a criminal penalty for not complying on the other side. So it also raises other issues that are concerning. Look at all of this sensitive information that's going to be running around. Forget attorney-client privilege. I think that's important. But look at this other information that we have. Marty, I would have your social security number. I would have your home address. I would have your driver's license. I would have potentially have your passport. I have everything. I have it for you. I have it for your spouse. I have it for your trust. I have all that stuff. And all that has to get transmitted to me. What an opportunity for a nefarious actor to try to reach that sensitive information. Then I have to have a secure vault for that information. And then I have to transmit that to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, another opportunity for that information to get out. And of course, do we trust the government to maintain the integrity of that information as well? So we have data encryption issues. We have one opportunity is gives everybody an opportunity to relook at all of their documentation that they have and make sure it's up to speed and good because it has to incorporate new language that's involved. So in essence, we have 90 days to get all of that information. Now, for new entities, not so bad. If I set up a new entity for us, Marty, I would know the name of it. I would know where it's located. I would know who the owners are. I would know what trust it's going into. I would know the components of that trust. I would know who's in control. But when I go back, even for myself, you know, got to ferret all that out, and I have to have that all to them by December 31st, 2024, otherwise $591 a day. Oh, my God. So I think we're going to see some time extensions, but I can't rely on it, you know, in getting that done. I think we'll see some parts unconstitutional, but I can't rely on it. Right now, I think the best business practice is to comply. Mm-hmm. All right. And it's just the best business comply. If it's all for naught, may it be all for naught because it's crappy law and very intrusive, but to get it done. I saw one question talking about an inactive entity that came across.
Maybe Marty, can you read that out so everyone can?
Yeah. Actually it says if you have a shell LLC with no activity, pre-2020, does that entity need to file? And to that end, would it be advisable just to file any entity with an EIN or TIN? So it almost sounds like a inactive LLC that's been around for a few years.
Yeah, so 2020 is important because it has to be inactive since 2020. If it's inactive since 2021, it still has to file. But if it's inactive 2020 and it has no assets, has to have no assets. No assets and inactive for almost 4 years. No, doesn't have to file. Very few of those. All right. Okay. But if it has any assets, so you had a bank account that's in it that has $500 in it, it's got to file. The definition of inactive is very, very narrow. Now, if you have inactive shelf entities and you dissolve them before the end of the year, then they don't have to be reported, of course.
And that was actually a question someone had emailed in, is if a existing corporation pre-2024 goes out of business, dissolves, it's no longer in existence, does it need to file? And it sounds like what you're saying is no, it doesn't.
No, it's dissolved. If it's dissolved, doesn't need to file. But one of the things we're concerned about, especially with payroll companies that you work with, like you and I were talking, what if they have 20 employees now? So on the date they filed in March, they have 20 employees. Now they dropped down to 17 employees.
Yeah.
I got 30 days to update. Now we become a filing company. And then in December, they now have 21 employees. No, they're not. So the question, but there's only a 30-day window. It's not a year-end window. One at least good thing, if there's anything that's good, is it's a one-and-done filing other than for changes. In other words, once we file, you know, Marty, Paul, Harry Co. LLC and have all the beneficial owners and controlling interest and company applicants reported to FinCEN, absent changes to our identifying information, which could be done through our FinCEN numbers, there's nothing else. It's not an annual reporting requirement.
And for payroll companies, a lot of the companies, since many of them deal with what you would term as Main Street USA companies, to take a typical classic restaurant, might have 25 employees, drop down to 16, go to 21, drop down to 19, and or seasonal places, all the beach communities that have ice cream shops that'll have, you know, 30 people on staff and then go down to two. So it's a little bit of a volatile.
It's very, very, very volatile. And the point of question is that for those, it's when you file. All right. So, but then when it drops down below, you now have to become a reporting entity. In those cases, just using the ones that you just described, I would turn around and file them. In other words, they might have 30 employees, they might have two employees, but there's two owners, you know, Mutt and Jeff are the two owners, and they're 50-50. You know, Mutt and Jeff file, their trust file, we get it filed done, and then if they go up to 100 employees, go down to two, we're in compliance. Mm-hmm. Remember, who is behind it? Remember, all the nefarious activity occurred in small businesses. Sure. Let's
Harry,
do more questions.
Well, quick question. So you before on this subject, the issue came up of the parent-child versus brother-sister relationship with bigger companies. And I know, you know, part of your practice with asset protection, you recommend for very good reasons, a brother-sister relationship, carving out assets from a bigger company, which then gets into the CTA.
Correct. So if we have Marty, Paul, Harry Co., and we have 20 employees and we're over 5 million, we're exempt. And if we have subsidiaries, wholly owned LLC subsidiaries or corporate subsidiaries, those subsidiaries, parent child, if we don't have to report, they don't have to report. But for asset protection and estate planning purposes, many times we'd like to get, you know, the real estate should be held in a separate entity. The equipment should be leased back in a separate entity. The intellectual property should be held in a separate entity. You know, stocks, bonds, and cash should be in separate. All of those, which are now brother-sister entities, all need to be reporting entities. And we bake it in that way.
So one question that actually one of our members came up with, and it kind of plays on to the, think about our Harry, Paul, Marty Co., Widgets Are Us. Here it is, 2024. It's been in business. Prior to 2024, Paul's retiring early in 2024, sells out, buys out, no longer a beneficial owner, a new owner come in, invests, now we have a replacement. How does all that play out? We're reporting. Does Paul still need to report, or is he considered?
If he's no longer a beneficial owner, his information is no longer necessary. Remember, who's the new owner must comply. So that owner that bought Paul's third must comply. And it's our responsibility, Marty and Harry, to make sure they comply. Mm-hmm. If they're not complying, they're not eligible to buy. When they sign our operating agreement, our shareholders agreement, our limited partnership agreement, they're saying they will get that information needed to fence in so our company, Widgets R Us, remains in compliance. Mm-hmm. And how long do they have to do that? It's not 90 days. Under the current law, it's 30 days. Now, that's another one, but constitutional, it's way too short a window. The bill that's going through Congress that may or may not, it's passed by the House, not the Senate and not the president yet, extends the change period from 30 days to 90 days to give us 90 days to deal with the change. I mean, by the time that purchase happens to sell it, to Paul to sell, the other guy or gal to buy, our window is closing. We've formed over 100 entities in our law firm in January. It's hard to believe we're 30 days away from the close period for those entities to comply. And I look at the work, the analysis that has to go with one that we know, and it's challenging. So this is really burdensome. Okay, questions. We have a few of them.
Yeah, I want to encourage people to keep asking questions here. I know, Harry, that the firm, your firm, Barth Calderon, on a firm-wide meeting the other day, we're getting into, the whole attorneys were there, into these issues. And with existing clients now, it is not a simple matter of just filing. You know, they have multiple assets, businesses, you know, rental properties, you know, engaging in asset protection. It is a big deal to find out who has to report, and it's not quick and dirty.
Yeah. Let me just say one thing, Marty, then jump in. So this is another issue. The other issue is the burden. Look at the burden that's being placed upon small American businesses, or even foreign businesses that are doing business in America are also subject to this through the Corporate Transparency Act. And the purpose of that is to cut down on criminal activity using shell and shelf companies. I don't believe that's ever going to happen. I believe that we're going to have the burden. People are going to spend the money. We're going to be threatened by our government if we don't do it. And do I think that terrorists or money launderers are going to say, oh, now the Corporate Transparency Act is there, we're going to tell everybody all of our information? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. They'll create artificial people. They'll hire people to be friends for them. And they'll just find another way around this, maybe a little bit more work for them. They'll do it. So I don't, it's like the old story, you know, if you take away the guns from all the people that are good, solid citizens, then only the criminals have guns. Mm-hmm. And this is a similar scenario.
So Marty, can I ask you a question? So with the payroll companies, they why is it such a big topic for them? Is it because they are a trusted resource for education like this for their constituents, and the clients are asking them for stuff like this?
Well, generally, because payroll companies are a trusted advisor, and unlike their CPA firm or their law firm that they may speak with once a year, tax time, or a law firm once a year or every couple of years when an issue pops up, they're talking to their payroll companies weekly, bi-weekly. So they really look at them as a trusted advisor, and they'll often reach out and say, hey, I've read this thing about the Corporate Transparency Act. I'm a small business. I'm a landscaper. I don't know anything about this. Tell me about it. So that's why it's really important for payroll companies to understand the Corporate Transparency Act, have good documentation, whether it's blogs or whatever that's vetted by a law firm, to be able to pass it on so that their companies, these Main Street USA businesses, understand, you know, what the compliance regulations are for that. But that's why they often turn to their payroll companies, because they're talking to their payroll companies to do their payroll weekly, bi-weekly, all throughout the year.
Interesting.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. Sandra's got a question there, Marty, in the chat. It
seems let's see. So Sandra's asking, if we are a bank that has trust powers and meet the exemption parameters, but are trustees of trusts with several entities such as LLCs, as owners of the trust, do we as a trustee of these trusts have to ensure that all of the entities have to comply?
Okay, so you got two sides to that question. That's a great question. So the trust company, the bank is an exempt from the CTA. The trust company is exempt from CTA, but if the trustee of the, so let's say Marty's a trustee, Paul's a trustee, Harry's a trustee of the XYZ trust, and the XYZ trust holds more than 25% interest in a reporting company, then those trustees who have the power to move assets in there need to comply. Absolutely need to comply. Now, interesting, and we do a lot of international asset protection trusts. We do a lot of domestic asset protection trusts with third-party trustees. And some trustees have taken the position that they are exempt from having to comply on the trustee level. And then other trustees, every trustee that has the ability to touch that account has a FinCEN number and is reporting. The best intelligence is that Sandra, if you are a trustee in a trust and that trust has reporting companies, you have to make sure that not only the company complies, but that you yourself comply.
Great question.
Interesting. Well, we're up about at the time level here. If we don't have any more questions, I want to say, first of all, we're going to have a replay of this sent out to everybody that signed up and attended. So look for an email in the next few days so we get that out to you. And I want to thank Marty and Harry both for being here. Eye-opening information. I know this is changing every day, but thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you all. Marty, thank you so much.
Thank you, Harry.
All right. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now.